Study Steady engages in. So please help me welcome Wayne Sheffield.
Thank you very much. I hope everybody at this point has an agenda. So as you heard, I am a career coach. So I spend my days talking individually with people like you and helping them navigate, like a basketball coach, what's going on the court of their careers. And what I'm going to do tonight is to talk about one aspect of things that I talk about with my clients. And even within that, the one thing we're going to talk about is interviews. Within that, we're going to talk about really the heart of the interview, which is how you get across what value you bring. A couple of weeks ago, I gave a talk that talked more generally about an interview, and I'm going to review the essentials of that tonight so that everybody's oriented. Whether you were here or not, it will be at least be a reminder or perhaps an introduction to something which I can go into more depth with you if you want. But tonight we're going to be focusing on really how to tell your story, how to talk about why you're valuable and desirable as a candidate. And believe it or not, you are. Some of you don't look convinced. Maybe by the end you'll be convinced. So let me get a sense of how many people here are currently working. So maybe about a third. And how many people are working for themselves? Not so many. But it's good to know because I like to be able to address the audience. Now, I'm going to turn on the mic here because I want to ask you a question. Some of you have done something recently or in the more dim past that you were proud of at work, something that moved the ball ahead, whether if you're in a not-for-profit, it served clients better, or a for-profit served clients better. For-profit also could have served the bottom line, could have made your boss happy, could have been something that in a less direct way brought a team together or got a project done. Has anybody had that experience? Does anybody want to share an example of that? A small example? A large example. In other words, you could tell a longer story or a short, not so long, but...
Well, I do special events, and I'm on my community board of directors and executive board, and I was in charge of special events for our gala, and I brought a team together, and we raised, not a lot in a lot of terms, but over $16,000. So I made sure we had teams and co-chairmen and pulled everything together. And it was really my team that did it. I just put the ribbon on it.
Okay.
So I was proud of that.
Great, thanks. Anyone else have something?
I volunteer for a couple of organizations teaching a basic computer course, and one day their equipment to the internet was down, so they asked me to take a look at it, and I was able to take care of it and fix it. And
okay, good, thanks. Anyone else? Did I see another hand over here? Yes. Thanks.
I work as a volunteer in a Catholic church, and we had a special missionary image of Our Lady of Guadalupe delivered to the church, and we did some fundraising efforts around that. So I coordinated people to fill 29 time slots where we sold merchandise. We raised $731 for the church. We got $900 in donations. And then to keep the image moving around the world, we raised another, you know, $100 for that also.
Fantastic. Thanks. Anyone else? We have somebody up here.
Thank you.
I took over, I created a position as the go-to financial person in a small creative advertising agency. And at that time, there were many contracts with employees, with non-disclosure agreements, with clients, none of which had been standardized or passed by the lawyer, but had been written helter-skelter. So I took all of the contracts over my time there, went over them with the lawyer, standardized them so that all the legal loopholes were closed and anyone could pull a contract going forward and know that it was solid legally. And I feel real proud about that.
Great. Thank you. There's time for one more. Someone else. Okay.
Hi, good afternoon. I worked as a volunteer for a nonprofit while I was unemployed in Silles. And I worked with a gentleman who is from France who did not really know much about computers. And we worked together, did a presentation to the executives and his peers, and also saw him graduate from the program. So that was a good accomplishment for me.
Great. Thanks. Thank you. All right. Now, I want to ask you, those of you who are listening to these stories, what can you tell me about these people? Any one of the stories. Did anything strike you in one of the stories about that person? Are there any characteristics? If you were thinking of them as a potential employee, what did you learn from them by their telling those stories? Yes. All right, and it'd help if you can refer to the story a little bit so that people know which one you're talking about. Thank you. You had your hand up?
I was going to say, I felt that each one of them took initiative in their respective positions.
Okay, great, thanks. And behind you?
Accountability and working as a team player, being made, and I talked about putting the team together.
Okay. That would be you. Okay, thanks. Yes.
Each one of them did something that really helped, contributed to the community or to the work community.
Sorry, I should be.
Oh, yeah. Each person contributed something to either to help in a benevolent cause or to contribute to their community or their work.
Or their workplace. Thank you. Any other comments?
Well, I just had a comment on your story. I think he's in his element if he's a problem solver. So I think that's a plus.
Okay. So I wanted you to listen to those comments. They said very flattering things about being a problem solver, getting things done, having initiative. Now, if I go into an interview and I say to you, I'm a problem solver. I take initiative. I'm a real team player. What are you going to say?
Show me.
Show me. Right, exactly. But if you tell the story, the interviewer is going to draw those conclusions themselves. They're going to be sitting at you across the table and saying, oh, he or she is a team player. He really knows how to get this job done. And guess what? When they tell themselves that, they're going to believe it. So this is the point. This is the essence of your interview. You need to convince them that you can get the job done on a very basic level, and this is how you do it. So let me take a step back and just go over some of the basics about interviewing before we begin. And this is will be a review from people who were here a couple of weeks ago. Consultant mentality. What do I mean by that? I mean that there's a real temptation to approach an interview because they're so hard to get and you're so desperate to get a job. There's a temptation to approach an interview as if you're crawling on your knees in front of this person way up there who might possibly, out of some generosity, give you a job. I'm here to tell you that is not a productive way to approach interviewing. Even if you feel that way, and we all do at some time or another, resist. Because I don't know about you, but one, I don't particularly want an employer who thinks that way of me, will throw him a bone. And what's more, I don't think any employer who really feels that way is somebody I want to work for. So I would encourage you to do something that consultants do. Consultants, for those of you who have been a consultant, you'll know this. Consultants go out on a regular basis, weekly, if not more frequently, and talk to people to whom they might sell services. They sit down and they have a conversation with them. And the conversation goes something like this. I am here to tell you about the things that I offer, and I'm also here to hear from you what problems you're facing that I might be able to solve. So it is more of a back and forth business conversation, a conversation between equals, than it is this vast disparity of somebody deigning to give you something. Now, a consultant is working for money. The person who is hiring is still in charge. But that doesn't mean that the person in charge doesn't have a conversation of equals with the person from whom they may buy some services. So your overall approach to interviewing is that you have a right to be in the room and that you're going to be deferential to the person you're speaking to. So that's what I mean by consultant mentality. Another thing that can get in the way of a job interview is that there's already a lot of pressure. Because in the end of the day, however much you prepare, it's kind of like a final exam where you feel that you have to have answers to questions and that the way in which you answer those questions directly affects the outcome of the meeting. All of that is true, and what we're going to talk about mainly tonight is how to prepare so that you can be better prepared to answer those questions. But I also want to say that the goal of each interview that you have is not to get the job. It is rare and usually not advisable to take a job after one interview because you probably don't know a lot about the job. It's tempting. There you are. You've got somebody who's offering you a job. Your tongue's hanging out. You're ready to take it. And you may. But if you set your goal for the meeting to simply have them like you enough to invite you back in, then you can lower your overall tension about the results that you need to get. You don't need to get the offer. You just need to get them engaged with you and interested enough so that they'll invite you back in. So that's what your goal for the meeting is, just to get in the door again and have another meeting with them. What is their goal? I've talked already about the obvious one, which is they need somebody who can do the job. What else might an employer be looking for besides somebody who can do the job? All right, I'm going to repeat this because it's a short answer. Yes?
Someone who can get along with other people.
Someone who can get along with other people. Something I characterize as fit. It may be, if I'm the interviewer, that I recognize this person can get along with other people. It may be, as an interviewer, that I recognize they can or cannot get along with me. It may be that they're not going to fit in this company's culture. All of these things can be true, and I lump them together under fit. So in addition to being able to do the job, you need to be able to fit. It's hard to interview towards fit, But if you're going in for a creative job at an ad agency, you don't wear a three-piece pinstripe suit. You want to show that you're going to fit into the culture. And if you're going in to interview at an investment bank, you better be wearing a suit. So it'll depend on the atmosphere, it'll depend on the industry, it will depend to some extent on the company. And it's not something over which you have a lot of control, so I don't want you to spend a lot of time worrying about it, because worry as you may, there's not a lot you can do about it. But there's one other factor which is something that you can do something about besides being able to do the job and fitting. And I see a hand in the back. That's right. So the answer was, you want to show your prospective employees that you want it bad enough. Not only that, but another way to put that is that you want the job not because you're desperate for a job. I'll do anything. That's not really very appealing to a lot of employers. More appealing is, I really like this work. This is work that I want to do. And then you can go on and articulate why it is you want to do it. It could be the company. I really want to work at this company because it has such a good reputation as being a place where people can work hard and get rewarded for it. Or because it's a place where people work together and I'm a team kind of guy. Or it's a place where people are given the opportunity to move ahead on their own and I'm that kind of person. Whatever it is, you want to show your enthusiasm, what it is that really excites you about the job, and that is most impressive of all. A couple of weeks ago, I read an article which interviewed the chief recruiter for Goldman Sachs. Do you want to know what she said was her first priority in hiring someone? It was that they be enthusiastic about the job. First priority. So it's really tempting when jobs seem scarce and when it is hard to find a job because there are many more people competing for them, to think, oh well, my solution is to go for something that I don't really want that seems to be more available. That will only work as long as there's no one else who's trying out for that job who really does want it, for whom it is the right job, for whom it is the job that will be exciting and interesting, because those are the people who will get the job. So my suggestion to you is to figure out what those jobs are, and you may not be able to get them in one step, but if you can explain why it's important for you to get the job that you're getting and recognize that it's on the road to where you're heading, you will get a lot further, a lot faster. So that's the background that I like to say about the job. The consultant mentality, you are an equal. Your goal is only to get the next meeting, not to get the offer. And their goal is that tripartite goal of can do the job, fit, and want to do the job. That's what they're looking for in the candidates. So now what I want to talk about is the meat of the interview. You have a time when you come in and you have small talk. You have a time when you introduce yourself. But then you will have the opportunity, they will ask you questions. And even if they ask you a general question, whatever question they ask, I want to encourage you to turn it into an opportunity to tell about an accomplishment of yours, to tell them a story. We are hardwired to remember stories as human beings. You can tell these stories in a very buttoned-up corporate way or whatever way is appropriate for your audience. And I'll talk about the elements of a story that engage people in a minute. But I just want to say, as a general thing, not only are there going to be a lot of specific reasons why stories are a good idea in a job interview, but as human beings, we are hardwired for stories. That's why Hollywood does what it does. That's why we remember fairy tales from 4 years old and we remember nothing else. Okay? These are things that people pay for. These are things that people want and, as I say, like and hardwired for. as we illustrated in our first exercise here, people believe stories. The conclusions which this audience drew from what the people who reported said were very flattering. And there was nobody who raised their hand and reported on that who didn't believe what they were saying. So a story is a very compelling way to draw people in and to get them to believe you. And stories, needless to say, should be true. So I have an example here . Illustrations are stronger than claims. So you could say, I'm a team player, hard worker, quick learner, professional, and a great communicator. Or you could say something about a story that indicates characteristics of you. A story I like to tell about myself is one where I was a consultant and I was brought in by the head of IT, equity IT, at Goldman Sachs, because the year before, he had had a terrible budget process. And his managers were in revolt, and they had wanted to have nothing to do with the budget process. My job was to make the budget process something that they could do and live with. As a consultant, any of you have been consultants know this, the first thing you do is go out and ask a lot of people what went on. So you get different points of view. So I would go out to these managers, and each one of them would practically yell at me about how bad the process was and how they were never going to do it and how they could never get any work done if that's what they were required to do. So I was on my fifth or sixth manager, and I was standing outside his office leaning on the cubicle of the assistant who was there, and she said, oh, you're here to see John. I said, yes. She said, what are you going to talk to him about? I said, the budget. Oh, she said, the budget. Good luck. I said, what do you mean? What do you know about the budget? Well, it turns out she knew a lot about the budget. And I went in and talked to John, and then I came out and started to talk to her some more. And it turns out that she had been given no tools to do the budget, but essentially a lot of the budget responsibilities were sent to her. So I began to talk to her, and she had some ideas about how to make it better. And I got her to corral her other assistants, the other assistants to these managers. And to kind of make a long story short, I began to understand the budget process better from those people who had only learned about the parts that they had to do and learn about how to make it better from them than I did from the managers themselves. So at the end of the day, I learned what they needed. I went back to corporate at Goldman, the finance department, and got them to change some things that they could change with the budget. I got these people to recognize what the key steps were, the assistants. I developed Excel spreadsheets to make it work. And that way, we came up with a budget process. When the new financial controller came on board, I handed him this process with people already trained as to what they had to do. All of the steps were laid out, and a mechanism was available for people to put in their numbers and get the numbers, roll them up to corporate. And it was all because of this assistant who got me going on things. So that's a way to tell the story. And I should, you know, if you end it, you say, I went back to the equity IT guy. Actually, the controller came to me 2 months after the budget was done and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't know how I could have survived, because he just knew on the job without having that process in place. So that's an example of a story, maybe longer than you'll have time to do an interview, maybe not, where you get an opportunity to tell a story that not only tells about some specific high-level skills that I might brag about, but also talks about a lot of stuff that is minor and under the table that I might never think to mention because it's not on if I'm interviewing for a, a financial control job, it's not something that's on the financial control list of things that need to be done. So name a couple of the big skills that came out of that story that might be on a financial control job requirement.
Good analysis.
Analysis. Okay. Yes?
The requirement gathering.
Okay. Now name a couple of things that wouldn't be on a job description that might be interesting to an employer.
Listening skills.
Never seen it on a job description. Okay.
Training.
Might not be on that job description.
Curiosity.
So there are a lot of things that we could go over, and my point is that in a relatively short period of time, I'm sure that was not longer than a couple of minutes, I told a lot of things about myself. Did I seem like I was bragging? Not particularly, right? I was just telling the story. Now, it's expected. I'm in an interview situation. I'm going to tell a story that's favorable to myself. If I'm in another situation, well, then you might not tell a story that's quite so obviously favorable to yourself. But that's certainly what people expect in an interview situation. So it's not going to appear to be out of line, bad manners, or anything else like that. So that's, and I also here, to go on to the next point, I made it real. I talked about where there were problems. I could have emphasized those more if I wanted. I talked about things other than the ending. It's really tempting, and a lot of people, if you think about it, would first reaction would be when you're answering a question to say, you know, give me an example of a success you had. Well, when I was at Goldman Sachs as a consultant, I was brought in to solve a budget process or to make a budget process better. And I did, and the financial controller came in and said it was great. So the equivalent of that, if you think back to a fairy tale, is the princess was pining away in her room. She looked down and saw the woodcutter's son come into the courtyard. A week later, they were happily married. You don't know any fairy tales like that. Why is that? Because what really engages people is the process, the things you had to overcome, the difficulties, the slaying of the dragon. You're interested, you get involved to see, is the prince going to slay the dragon? You know, it's a fairy tale, so you know the prince is going to slay the dragon, so that's not really what people are there to hear about. You want to tell them the details. He had to go out, he had to find a dragon, he had to get the witch's help, and he had to get a hair from her nose, or whatever it is. You'll stay away from the hair and the nose part in the interview, I'm sure. So you want to remember to be as specific as you can. And that might mean that you skip over some parts of the story altogether because you have a sense that what this audience needs to hear is maybe some of the difficulties I had when I went up to negotiate with the financial control people at Goldman, who were not used to departments coming back and saying, well, we can't do what you require. You know, so you have to, then I might go into talking a little bit more about how I presented it to them, how I looked into what their needs were and found another way to meet their needs than what they'd published. Or it might be some more, if it's a technical interview, I might want to talk more about what I did with the Excel spreadsheet or how I got the help to get that to happen. You know, so it depends on who your audience is. The same story comes out a lot of different ways. The other thing I did in that story, you might recognize it, is I included scale. I could say that, as a matter of fact, one of the things I do really well is to improve a budget process, and I've done that successfully where the financial controller came back and said, that's great. What's missing?
Figures.
What?
Figures.
Or, I didn't give you any figures, but what did I say? I told you how many people were in the department. I told you what the department was. I told you where the department was. All things to give you an idea of scale. Because it's tempting to think when you get into an interview that you want to try to become the square peg that you think the square hole they have is going to fill. But if any of you have ever been in a job for which you are overqualified or for which you are underqualified, you know it's a recipe for disaster. So to the extent that you can give an example that helps them understand the playing field that you're playing on, it'll get you into the right job. It'll get you the right responsibilities. It'll make it a happier situation for your employer and obviously for you. Any questions at this point? Yes. Wait a minute. Sorry.
In my previous jobs, I had worked for small companies. How do you magnify that?
What it doesn't, well, first of all, and you may want to go work in a much bigger place, but most of us want to take one step at a time.
Right.
So it's not unnatural that you should move from a small-ish company to a less small company. Also, there are a lot of ways you could be dealing with a company with four people dealing with the most complex issue or project or event or whatever in the world, or accounting problem. So it's not that there aren't other ways to show what you did. One of the things that my story also shows is some knowledge in how to consult, some knowledge in financial control, some knowledge in the technical stuff. So I was trying to show you that breadth as well, even if I didn't mention where it was or anything about the number of people I was working with. Does that help?
Yes, thank you. Though actually, in my particular case, it went from a 10-person firm to basically a 2-person firm.
Well, I mean, there are always those issues, especially in this economy. Any other questions? All right, so just keep an eye, and I'll let you keep the microphone back there and hand it off when somebody has a question. Okay. Let's look at, all right, so what you tell them, I'll go back to what you're telling them is that you can do the job to the extent that you can, how you fit. If it's a teamwork culture, you're going to emphasize your teamwork. If it's an individual contributor culture, you're going to emphasize where you acted on your own. And your enthusiasm. I really like that story. That's why I picked to tell it. That was at a certain point in my career, it drew on a lot of stuff that I'd done. It was really exciting for me to pull all those parts of my background together and do it. So that's why I chose that story. And you should choose stories equally relevant to you, not just apparently relevant for the job. You can change your vocabulary and change your emphasis to make it more relevant to the particular audience you're speaking to. But it's hard to fake that enthusiasm. If you pick the one story you have, you're moving to a new industry. If you pick the one exposure you have to the new industry and it's not impressive or it wasn't that exciting, then it's harder to make that excitement come through than it is to pick a story where you really were excited and to bridge the gap in your listener's ear using the listener's vocabulary and that kind of thing. All right, so now I want to go about how to tell a story. A story has a beginning, and then it has an end. At the beginning, you're at this level, and at the end, you are at a higher level. And as I said before, the princess is depressed, sitting in her room. The princess gets married. You need more of a story than that. So that's where you start, though. The middle is where you're going to catch your audience's interest, because the middle is where you did stuff. And someone interviewing you needs to know, the reason they're interviewing is because they've got problems to solve. And they are taking the time out of their day to talk to people because they need people to solve problems. This is where the problems are, in the middle of the story. So implied in a great ending I exceeded sales for 3 years, sales quotas for 3 years in a row. Implied in there is a middle. But if you come in and you're the candidate who says, I did improve sales quotas 3 years in a row, and the following candidate says, I improved sales quotas 2 years in a row, and let me tell you how I did it, I don't think you're going to get the job. The person who tells about how they deal with problems on a day-to-day basis will have more reality, will have more depth, they'll understand, you'll have more, you won't have to go on faith that these quotas were the right quotas that somebody exceeded. So you don't just want the happy ending. You make it real. And it's tempting to only want to say those things that went well. It's not real. And you know you're getting here. You can afford to slip in some things where I learned something. I had this team and they weren't responding to me. I thought about that. I did this, I did that. We sat down and had a meeting. I took the leader out to lunch, whatever it is. I had a client the other day tell me a great story. He was filming a commercial in LA, and he said, we were filming and there was a lot of stuff going on, and all of a sudden there were all these people whistling by the gate with police whistles, and they were homeless people. And so he just kept going and got everything organized, but after a while he asked his assistant, what's going on? And the assistant said, well, there are these people and they want to get paid off so that they won't come whistle. So he said, the assistant said, we paid them off, and they went away for 20 minutes and then they came back. And they may be homeless, but they're not stupid. So my client, who was in charge of the whole thing, said, okay, who's the ringleader? He said, that guy. Took the ringleader aside, peeled off a fast $100 and said, your job is to keep everybody away from this set for the rest of the day. Okay, so we did. So things go wrong, you fix them. All right? So be specific. I've talked about including scale and scope. Focus your message. You're going to have people in front of you who have a lot of different interests, and you don't want to be guessing what every one of those are, but you really want to have a fairly clear idea of what it is you want to tell them. And it's sometimes when we're beginning telling a story, it doesn't come out the way we want. So one of the things you need to do in front of a mirror with somebody else here who is your job search buddy or somebody else you know, I don't encourage inflicting this on your spouse time after time, but somebody else is looking for a job is probably happy to hear your stories because it helps them with theirs. So you don't want to do like Goldilocks came up to the door of the Three Bears' house, and she noticed what a beautiful door it was. It was this nice oak veneer and had these great iron bolts in it, and it had a beautiful ironwork there. It was really impressive to her. She also noticed that when she opened it, it didn't squeak at all. You know what? Unless you're interviewing for a hardware position, don't go there, right? You want to be focusing your story on the details that are relevant for your audience. And then last, but certainly not least, is be enthusiastic. If you you can fake a lot of things, and if you're a great actor, you can even fake enthusiasm. But if you're having to fake enthusiasm on a regular basis, I would ask you to take a step back and ask yourself if you're looking for the right job. Because it's so much easier to look for a job that is interesting for you. And all these stories can be adapted. You may not know it because you are an expert in your field and you've seen how your skills are relevant in your field. When I asked you to distinguish between financial control aspects of my story and other aspects of my story, it's because those other aspects of the story are relevant in a lot of different places. Yes, if you go work somewhere else, you're going to have to learn their vocabulary. You're going to have to learn how they do business. You're going to have to learn how they talk about things. You're going to have to learn what things are the drivers for their business. But you can almost learn that from a textbook, and you can certainly learn that by talking to somebody who's done it for any number of years. But all that other stuff, all that ability to organize people or to negotiate or to pull together an event or to handle production problems when they go wrong, all that stuff is relevant in a lot of industries. And your job as job seekers is to figure out where that might be, talk to people if you're interested in something, and see if it works. I think about, you know, maybe you're interested in the circus. Anybody here interested in the circus? You know, maybe I've always wanted to be shot out of a cannon. So I go off and I find out people, you know, who are Ringling Brothers or Big Apple Circus, and I go, you know, how would I get into shooting, being shot out of a cannon? What's it about? And they look at me and they say, you're over 5'2". You can't be shot out of a cannon. Forget it. So I'll go, well, the circus, the grease paint. I want to get involved. And then they may talk to me and find out some other things about my background where I could get involved. And maybe I think of a friend of mine who was in financial control. I knew her at J.P. Morgan. And she has a hobby that she loves. Opera. Well, she can't sing, and she has no interest in working backstage. So what does she do? She goes around and looks for a job for 9 or 12 months and eventually sees an ad for a financial controller, which is the last thing she wanted to do. Where was the financial control job? The Metropolitan Opera. Now she's been working there for 12 years, happily doing financial control. And actually, she's bridged into development work, but she's still doing financial control end of it. And she's happy doing it. So you need to maybe be creative about how you get into the things that you're interested in, but it can be done. So that is roughly how you tell a story. Now, if you want, we've learned some principles about story. Who wants to bumble through a story and maybe get some ideas and certainly get some practice on telling a story? And if anybody in the other room wants to volunteer, please come in and you can tell your story too. No volunteers? Well, while we're waiting for a volunteer, are there any questions? Do people have some questions about that? Yes. Wait a minute. We need to get you the microphone.
My question is rather specific. If you're in finance and our job is to make market calls, when we give, say, stories and we talk about our experiences, do we talk about our past calls and how good they have been and how bad they have been, or should we talk about sort of what we expect, given the current situation, what the market call should be?
You have to do both. I don't know why you would hold back from doing one or the other.
Just
very appealing to hear what the market's going to do. Sometimes you don't want to be in a position of giving that away because you may not get that job. And you
Correct.
May want to execute against that strategy, and it might not be as effective if some big McGill is already doing it in the market.
So the answer is do.
You probably want to give some indications of your current strategies,
okay.
But also you can talk about your ratio of successes and that kind of thing, and certainly talk about specific successes. And when you're talking about specific successes, it's not just, I was successful. What did you do to get to that point? What was your thinking? What was, in other words, you're sitting there at your desk waiting for a big idea. Somebody calls you up and says, you know, my dog's gone, had to go to the hospital again. And you're thinking, oh, that pet spot that I was looking at yesterday, I have a new idea about it. So you tell people how you began. You tell them what you went through. Well, then I had to go out and do this or that kind of research, or I checked in with people, or I looked at historic other stocks that were parallel to the pet, and I decided it would be a good bet. Turned out to be a great bet.
Thank you.
Question in the back. So when you've got the microphone, try to pass it to the end of the row so we can speed that process along. Yes?
What if you had, let's say, two jobs that were similar in certain ways, and they were, let's say, administrative, but you're kind of locked into that, whether it's an office manager or personal assistant?
Locked in is a perception.
Or
it's not a reality.
I agree, but
so you're looking for ways to change the perception.
Or explain
no
some kind of success. No, I'm saying to give an example of your success other than you've been there 5 years and your salary went up X. If
you know, it's sometimes very hard to think of stories.
I agree.
And I'll tell you why it's hard to think of stories. All right. I want everybody here to think about the last time they drove a car. Anybody driven a car in the last couple of months? All right, even in New York, we have that. Okay. So when you drove that car, try to remember where you went from and to. With me? Okay. I bet you remember roughly the route that you went over, right? Okay. I want to ask you a more detailed question. How many times did you tap on the brake? How many times did you shift the wheel to the left or to the right? Can you tell me that? No, you can't tell me that. Why can't you tell me that? Because it's natural, because it's become automatic. So somebody call out their specialty, any specialty, just for an example.
Research.
Now, the reason that they're going to hire you for research instead of me for research is because, not because if I studied and worked hard and put in extra hours that I couldn't do research, because I could. But they don't want that. They want somebody for whom the research part of it, the name of the job, is pretty much automatic. Because where the value comes is, or where you want them to, where the value comes is from the research, but where you want them to be spending their time is in the gnarly, different, difficult parts of the research. If, on the way, in your driving example, if you'd had to swerve to avoid a little old lady, or if you'd been half an hour late because of a stoplight that was out of order or a fender bender in front of you, you would have remembered that. But the reason I'm hiring you is not because you swerved to get out of the way of the little old lady. It's because you're an expert driver. If I want a driver, I want somebody for whom it is automatic. Now, those things that are automatic for us, which are those things that we do professionally, are the things that we don't ever really think about. We spend all our time worrying about, well, I'm good at this, but I'm not really good at that, and that's part of it, and I really need to focus here, and you do, to get that thing done. But the reason you can afford to take the time to focus there is because all the other stuff, which is really important to getting the job done, is all automatic to you, and you don't need to think about it. So you don't. So this process of coming up with stories runs into some problems if you haven't practiced. My experience is if you look at your experiences and start to write down examples on paper, first thing that will happen is other ideas will come to your mind. Secondly, the next day that you look at that paper, more detail will come back about that story. And the more that you begin to practice and think about what was my role here, because you take your role for granted, what was my role here, then you're really going to begin to have a sense of developing these stories. You'll see how they will emerge because you've slept on them, because you've practiced, because you've been telling other stories. Where can you look for stories? On your resume. On December 1st, I'm going to be here talking about how to use stories on your resume. By that time, those of you who are back, I expect you to be able to volunteer because you will have thought about stories. And you can go to your resume for it. You can talk to people who you used to work with, ask them what they remember. Go back to old reviews. Old reviews have hints. Now we have a couple of questions. Where's the microphone? You need to get the microphone if you're going to be able to ask a question.
As a former recruiter, one of the ways that I used to get a story was I asked the question, what is the most rewarding experience that you had, or what gives you the greatest reward? And based on that was a crucial answer, which gave me that story and either caught the enthusiasm from that person and what the type of position that they were actually doing and what it is that they really enjoyed about their work. And that was very important to me to decide on who was the best candidate.
There you go. You heard it here first. You also see an example there of a professional interviewer, a person who's really thought about what their questions are and what the effects are. A lot of people you're going to be interviewing with don't really know. This is something they're doing because they need somebody to do the work. So, oh yes, I'll go and interview. Not that they know how to interview effectively, but they know they've got to do it to get somebody in the door. By following the principles in the first section here, the interview strategy, and by telling your stories, they don't have to think. You are doing the thinking for them. You will make it an effective experience for them. Other questions?
I was going to practice with the story.
Is that okay.
Did I?
Make it quick. Sure.
Right. I mean, if you don't have time, that's
be,
fine.
Please.
Okay. I solved a problem at where I work. I don't want to go into the name of it, but a bank. And I do legal research. And we were being charged for legal work, legal cases specifically. Mm-hmm. And so the vendor was charging us whether they found cases or not at the courts. So I immediately thought there's a problem here because we constantly are getting invoices for cases that they have not retrieved.
Okay.
So everyone's frustrated because they're being charged for nothing.
Okay.
So I collaborated with people in my field, in the research area, outside the company, and I got a list of other vendors which provide the same type of information.
Okay.
Upon discussing it with several of these people, one company came to light which had an excellent, you know, track record.
Mm-hmm.
So I tested it out, and they provided the legal work in record time, you know, within a 24-hour turnaround, and also at a low cost. And we since that time, have been using them ever since. And everybody is just thrilled with that result.
So I want to ask two questions here. What did we learn about her professional skills, and what did we learn about the other skills that are more, that's specifically applicable to the legal profession, and what did we learn about other skills that she has? Any volunteers? She what?
Resourceful.
Resourceful, okay. Yes.
Perceptive.
Proactive.
Care about the bottom line of the company.
Care about the bottom line of the company. Anything else?
Problem solver.
Okay, so these are things you want to be said about you. So this is a very simple story, but very effective. Sometimes there are things that we want to know, and stories sometimes can raise questions appropriately. Sometimes questions come up that are distracting. Is there anything that you can think of that was might add to her story or which were problems for you? You had a comment, maybe not answering that question?
I had a question because I used to be a middle school teacher, and I did it for 6 months. I mean, I had 150 kids I was working with.
I'm sorry, you don't have the microphone, so I need to get you the microphone. Sorry. You were a middle school teacher, and you had 150 kids.
I had a lot of responsibilities at this job. I was like, but basically 6 months in, I just decided it wasn't for me.
Okay.
So every time I tell a story, I said I did midterms, I said I gave tests. I was basically teaching these kids, five different classes, especially the whole thing, the whole deal. And it wasn't for me. I just hated it. So every time I tell a story, they always ask why you leave. And then I just basically can't think of any real good reason other than the fact that I really wasn't.
Well, if you begin to look at some of the things you've done in other jobs that have been satisfying, you can pick out the elements of those that were there in that job, if there were any, and say that here's where I was focusing. This is where I really feel like I bring more to the table, and this is where I want to focus. So you could just decide, as good as some job is, some other job is better for you. So who was it? I guess it was Calvin Coolidge, who, when he became president, was the best stenographer in the United States. He decided he wanted to do something different with his skills. No excuse needed. He just wanted to do something different. The question in the back, can you pass back the microphone? Do you have a question? Oh, no. Okay. I want to just take a minute to look at these two things at the end. Difficult interview questions. What's the worst question that you can be asked? Where's the mic? Oh, there we are. What's the worst question you could be asked?
What's your greatest weakness?
Okay. There is no greatest weakness question that can be not be answered with a story. And the way the story looks is, I got an assignment, I did some good things, and I screwed up because of this weakness. And I learned how to compensate for the weakness and had a great result. Or in that one story, the first story, you may not have had a great result, but then you quickly follow it with another story where you illustrate what you learned and how it made the result of the second thing better. The other thing is, a lot of people who are asking that question don't really care specifically about what your greatest weakness is. They're just trying to get the conversation going. And by giving them a story or two, you're really helping them understand why you are right for the job. So even if you're telling a story about a weakness, as long as you can show that you've learned from it, then you've given them a lot of other information about why you're right for the job, and you've distracted them from, if they really care about the weakness, you've distracted them from that. Next question. Yeah. Wait a minute, in the back, yes.
One other, just quick. At the end of the interview, just let us know, when they say, do you have any questions for us? Do you have a question, or do you just, I've seen competing advice.
We addressed that last time, so I want to just address it quickly, but I don't want to go into a lot of things that are, so in preparing for the interview, you should have at least three questions that are the most important things that you want, knowing what you do when you walk into the interview, that you want answered. When you get that question at the end, if one of those three important questions hasn't been answered, well, then you can ask it. And if it has, if they've all been answered, you can go through and say, well, when I came in, my priorities were to find out about this and this and this, and we've been over that, so I really got my priorities answered. Or anywhere in between, but that's just one approach. Somebody else needs the microphone?
But definitely ask a question. Because I've seen advice.
When I said
One difficult question is, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
It is a hard question. And there are two things I want to say about it. One is, if you spend some time thinking about what you like and what you're interested in, then you have a place to go. Even if you're changing fields, you can be frank about that. There's a story in the 5 O'Clock Club books. Kate Wendleton is making her transition from being a technician, an IT person, to being an HR person on her way to being the career person that she is today. And she got a job at a company doing IT, but with permission to sit in on the HR meetings. And after about 9 months, she was more valuable to the HR meetings and had found a successor for herself in the IT position. She made the transition. So even in a situation like that, you're looking for something to move into something else. You're talking to small companies where this kind of thing might be possible. You can say, in 5 years, I see myself in more of an HR role. And what I'd like to propose to you is I can come in and solve your technical problems. And if you'll let me partake in your HR meetings, then I can move into that. And you can describe in more detail how that would happen. So that's just one example. The microphone's behind you.
Yeah. One of the difficult questions I have faced is that how much you are making currently and what you want in your next job.
Okay, so just quickly, because everybody should know that, the first answer to that is I'd be happy to talk about salary once I know more about the job. Or you can say salary won't be a problem. And sometimes people will persist, and there are a lot of other questions, but this isn't the place to answer it. I really want to get to questions that are more difficult about your experience. You can give them a very wide range and say, the actual salary that I used to make, once we get further along in this process, I'd be happy to share with you. Other questions that you worry about getting asked? The microphone back to the back, please.
Again, as a recruiter, one of the questions
that
a lot of people had problems with when I asked them was the famous question, why should I hire you? And in that, some people were readily, you know, with a statement. I actually used to have them just write a statement, one sentence. This is your one sentence to tell about yourself, to sell yourself. Why should I hire you? And I think that is really important to have that as you're moving forward.
Okay, so let me suggest one way in which that can happen is, the reasons that you want to do it is because it fits with what you want to do and it fits with what you know how to do. So if you've learned to talk about your experience in a way that that listener can hear, then you say, because I want to do this kind of thing, and tell them a story on a bigger scale, in a slightly new way, or whatever. In other words, use the opportunity to sell yourself and connect them with what you can do and with what you want to do, your enthusiasm about it. Could get the microphone up here, please. Pass that across, please.
This question may be unusual for most. Have you ever been convicted?
Is it a legal question? Do people know if that's legal to ask?
Yes, it is a legal question.
Then you got to answer it.
How would you best answer that question? Based on the recruiter who's here, perhaps
you
can give tips.
One of the ways that I saw that whole issue handled was an ad that appeared years ago in the Toronto Globe Mail. And it was an ad for someone who was innovative, creative in their solutions, bottom line oriented, and as evidence, he cited the fact that he had successfully run marijuana into the United States for 6 years, and that since being captured and serving his time in jail, he had gone out and educated over 400 students about the dangers of illegal activity. So what you do is you try to find a way around it. Now, that's a very frivolous example, and obviously that person had a lot on the ball as an entrepreneur. You'd probably want to hire him. But it's a very serious issue for a lot of people, and you really need to be ready to be frank about it. And if I were in a position where I had been convicted, I would want to talk to other people in the judicial system, other people in my position, and find out ways in which they've handled it. Sometimes you're going to want to come with a recommendation of some kind, and maybe, because his recommendations were from the DA who convicted him. So you really want to be showing that you've turned the corner. Okay?
Does the recruiter back there have any tips?
All right, well, we'll come back to that. You can ask her later. There's another woman who has a question right here.
I've been consulting probably over 10 years, and I want to get back to a full-time...
Is this a question in an interview?
Yes, yes.
Oh, what's the
question?
So
the question is, because I've been consulting for so long and I want a full-time job, the question would be, why? Why do you... And so I always say stability.
That's not the answer they want here, because I don't want to have anybody hiring, coming to me, counting on me being stable when even if I want to, I may not be able to. So I would find another answer. And one of the ways you can answer that question, and again, what you show is where working on your own, you can do things at a certain scale. When you're working in a larger organization, it allows you more scope to broaden your skills and to exercise your skills on a bigger playing field. So you want to give an example of a story where, well, when I was working at this, we came up with this fabulous thing. You show the problems you had, the result you got. But if we'd been at a bigger place, we would have been able to do, I had ideas about doing this and this and this, and we couldn't do them. That's why I want to be at a bigger place, so that I can get a bigger result. Okay. Pass it back, please. All the way back.
Why did you leave your last job?
Why did you leave your last job? The best answer is new challenge. In this economy, most people answered because they were laying everybody off. There's no, it used to be, you know, 3 years ago, if you'd said that, people would have sort of felt sorry for you. But it's kind of normal at this point.
But what if you got fired?
Wait, get the microphone.
But then if you get fired, that question becomes
more
difficult.
So I have a question. I don't think that any employer ever says that unless there's a criminal act involved that they're firing somebody for cause. Even if you're not getting along with your boss or if it's a terrible fit, first of all, no one's going to be going back and checking on that. It doesn't mean that I ask you to lie about it, but what it means is you really need to think about it and say, I was in the wrong job. I was exercising these skills. That was bad judgment. I recognize now in other jobs that I've had or jobs I've had before where I thought that going off in this direction was a good idea, but it wasn't. If you even get to that point. But most of the time, a lot of questions that people ask like that are due diligence questions. They have to cover their bases. By the time someone's asking you due diligence questions, they want you on board. They just have to go through the motions. What they want is a quick, glib answer, and they'll check it off on their list. Their due diligence will be done. follow-up? Okay. Any other questions? Let me tell you some bad questions you could be getting. Just pick some up. I thought they'd be fun. Okay, the kinds that you should prepare for and expect that are really not so bad are: describe a time when you were faced with a stressful or difficult situation and demonstrated your leadership, your ability to do the job, whatever it is. You will inevitably, from a good interview, get a question like that. Have an answer. Everybody's faced stuff like that. Give yourself an answer. Another one: give me an example of a time when you set a goal and were able to make it or were not able to make it. That's a question of some variation of that you will probably get. Give me an example where you dealt with conflict or a bad boss or something like that. Have something like that available. This can be one of those things where something went wrong, but more things went right, ended up at a better place. Nobody expects you to tell the story where it started up here and ended up down there. So you don't have to worry about that. Tell me about the time you were able to successfully deal with another person, even if that individual may not have personally liked you or vice versa. Again, it's kind of like the conflict question. You want to think about that. And again, you start by writing ideas for stories down. You should all, by the end of the week, you should all have a piece of paper which is filled with two columns of 50 stories. And then figure out which ones you're going to go into in more depth. But just start it. Keep it going. It's amazing, having committed it to paper. Committing it to paper is really important, how much the stories will develop. Now, there's some other questions like this. You can try to pull an answer out of the stories that you know and prepare, but they're kinds of things that I wouldn't necessarily be prepared for. Give me a specific example of a time when you had to conform to a policy which you didn't agree with. Give me an example of a time when you had to make a split-second decision. Now, if you're in a business where split-second decisions are the norm, well, then you should always have some examples on hand. But if not, you know, there aren't a lot of split-second career coach decisions. So tell me about a time when you missed an obvious solution to a problem. Good question, but not necessarily what I'd expect. Tell me about a time when you were forced to make an unpopular decision. These kinds of things come up. But my overall point is, if you think about your stories and know your background, the same story, as I say, can be told. You can tell the first half at one point in an interview and the second half at another. Certainly, if you're preparing any kind of pitch to impress somebody, you're only going to be able to allude to a story. So I might say in my pitch, if I were going for some kind of financial control job, referring back to my earlier story, I might say, I developed a budget process from scratch at Goldman, and it was like I was under hostile fire because none of the managers wanted to do the process. And then go on to say something else. You've left your listener with some curiosity about something that you want them to ask you about. Gives them an opportunity to ask them a question, to ask you a question that you want to answer. So you can just throw in a little quip from it and get them interested.
I have a question. Is it bad if you don't have an experience that relates to the question?
You're going to find the closest thing that you can. There are obviously going to be some things where you don't have specific experience. There are a lot of things where they'll ask a question, what would you do if? And you'll say, well, I'm not sure. But there was one other time, when I was given an assignment back when I was working for ABC Company, I really didn't have any idea how to create an employee manual. And what I did was this, to show them that you're thinking about it and that you have the experience of thinking out a problem and making it happen. Where's the microphone? We have a question back here.
Hi, Thank you. So question is, tell me about one time or one example of situation when you had to sacrifice your professional integrity.
No one who wants to be hired, at least by me, is ever going to sacrifice their professional integrity. If you do say that you did, it's not clear to me why anybody would hire you. So that is one of those answers. There's another, can you pass the microphone back over here, please?
I just want to make a point.
Wait, you can't make a point if the other people in the other room can't hear you. There's a man up here who wants to make a point.
In regards to what the person just said, Harvard Business School has a case study, and they teach a course that says ethically, if you're not comfortable with what the company's doing, you got to walk away.
Yeah, you got to walk away. That's right. Thank you. You have a question back here?
That was a question that came to a colleague. Tell something remarkable.
I'm sorry, which question are you going back to?
Tell me something remarkable.
Well, the way I would go there is...
Work about yourself, that was the...
So I wouldn't say, I wouldn't want to claim that if somebody said remarkable or marvelous or fantastic or any of those things that I think makes me a little uncomfortable to think of myself in those terms, I would say, I don't know about remarkable, but one of the things that my boss liked best was the time when I... Deflect the question, turn it to your advantage, and make it something that you feel you can answer honestly. One or two more? Any other?
What about when they ask you about 15 questions or so in a technical arena and you have not fully researched everything about the thing, like you just hadn't prepared, and it's a test.
All right, so
what do you do? Like, what is X?
So,
what is Y?
So there are times when you're going to get a technical interview, and a lot of times...
And you weren't prepared for that.
A lot of times you're going to know it, and you're going to be prepared. And one of the advantages of working through a recruiter, which... if you're lucky, if you can do, is that the recruiter should prepare you for that. But if you're not prepared and you don't know you should have been prepared, then what you say is, that's a specific, that's why I have my such and such guide or this site on the internet where I go to look up the answers for that. What I have done in the past, and if you can give an example where you didn't know something and you did research to find the answer, you can give that as an example to show that you can do the job even if you don't know the specific answer. I left some materials out for you for the 5 o'clock club. This is a newsletter some of you may have gotten. I don't know if I brought enough copies. This orange sheet shows the rates on the back, but on the front it shows the different talks. Thank you. It shows the different talks that that are given each week. The 5 o'clock club is interesting because not only does it give you these talks and also provide a little networking opportunity, but you sit around in a group. It's a group coaching situation. Excuse me. It's a group coaching situation, and when you are there, you are with a group of your peers who have a sense of what your job search is about, and it's a good way to keep your job search going. It's a place where you can go and be accountable each week and where you can really move things ahead by working with other people who are also, well, not all unemployed, but all of whom are looking for the next job. Can you pass that microphone back, please? So I'll take your question in a minute. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm a coach there on Monday nights. They also have a live group on Wednesday nights. And for those of you who are not so conveniently located to Manhattan, there are groups on the phone on other nights on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night. So that is a resource that is available to you, the 5 o'clock club. As I alluded to earlier, I'm giving a talk, a couple more talks this year here, one on resumes on the 1st of December. If you want to be on my mailing list and get ongoing notifications of talks, please fill out one of these and hand it to me. You don't need to do that if you're already receiving the emails. And you can also look for those talks on my site, winsheffield.com. And I have time for one more question. And then afterwards, I'll be sticking around. If you have any questions for me or you want to talk, please come up and say hello.
The people in the other room were just hoping you'd touch on the last thing on the agenda, the behavioral interview.
Oh, those questions that I read out that were the difficult ones, I didn't identify them as such, but those are behavioral interview questions. What behavioral interviewing is asking you about experiences that you have actually had. So you get to say what you've done, which is why they're called behavioral, because they show your behavior. And if you read the press on it, it's like, ooh, you don't want to go into an interview where they're asking behavioral questions. And my point to you is you should be praying that they're asking behavioral questions, because if you've got your stories prepared, you will be all set for it. So with that, I will finish up the formal part of the program, and I'll be here to answer your questions afterwards. Thank you very much. Thank you.